6 years is more than two.
I mean, you don't need to be a lawyer to be attorney general.
No, but it helps. I mean, I think the people of the country are comforted if you theoretically know something about the law.
It's one of the things I learned from Thursday Night TV back in the 80s. You don't necessarily have to be qualified for the job you're appointed to. You just have to be home on a Sunday afternoon to answer the phone. And then all of a sudden you become appointed a judge in a New York City night court.
I loved that show, but I actually never knew his origin story. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's how he became the night court judge. Is he was home on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock and the phone rang and he answered it. Nobody else was. It was like the outgoing mayor or something had to have all these appointments in before he left office.
Nice. I loved that show. I mean, not to get too far from here, but I loved that show. Like that was, and I don't know what this says about me because I was a little kid when that was on. And it was like, I loved John Larroquette.
I love John Larroquette. And of course, I just finished watching Frasier in Boston, you know, the newest Frasier on Paramount Plus. And my binge right now, I know it's not car related, but my binge right now is like the show I fall asleep to is Cheers. I went back and started watching the first episodes of Cheers. And of course, that's where Harry Anderson got his start too. So
I just saw a skit of him on Cheers doing some trick against Norm, I think, with making an egg disappear under a hat.
No, that was against Cliff.
It was against Cliff. It was the mailman, Cliff. Yeah.
Yeah. Drinking. I can drink this beer without touching the
without
hat.
Touching the hat.
Yeah, the shot.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Well, he considered himself, and I can't remember that actor's name, he's dead now, but he considered himself a magician first. And he was really good at that sleight of hand stuff.
Harry Anderson.
Okay. And he later played Dave Barry on Dave's World, which was another show that I enjoyed. Yeah. Wow. It's with this 80s and 90s nostalgia trip here. Maybe when we roll up the dice for our real talk project this evening, we'll hit that era. It's one I'm less prepared for, but.
Well, let me see if I can get this. Guess what? How about 1994 for our first year?
Okay. So did we explain the conceit here, which is that we are going to decide what, you know, you've won a new car of your choice in this year. What is it going to be? And in some respects, this is going to depend on our knowledge of the cars of any given year.
I kind of put it as it's The Price is Right, Bob Barker, The Showcase. What car are you hoping is presented to you? Because they did have some episodes where they like gave away a Corvette or, you know, they got some high dollar cars in there occasionally.
So my high school government teacher won a car on a game show in about 1975, 70. It was the $25,000 period. And the car he won was a brand new Chevrolet Chevette. And he was still driving that when I graduated high school in 2001. He got his absolute, I would say he got more of the use out of the car. It was bright yellow. Cute little car. It would be a hoot at car shows today, but it was completely falling apart by the time it was retired.
When I'm coming back from Huntsville on one of my routes, or multiple, because I don't like interstates. I like taking two lanes. Just coming out of Arab, Alabama, and I can't remember, 231, 431, whatever road I'm on. There's this metal building and a trailer. And for the last 3 years, for the first year I drove by, there was a green 76 Chevette two-door sitting kind of in front of both of these buildings, kind of centered with the hatch open. And then about 2 years ago, the hatch was closed. Somebody came along and closed the hatch. And when I went by there Tuesday, the Chevette had actually been moved up closer to the buildings, and it looked like somebody was actually working on it. So. Wow. It's just 76 Chevette. We all have our stories.
Wasn't the back seat an option on those? Like the base price was kept low by the fact that literally everything, including the back seat, was an option.
I don't know that.
So disapproving cat boy, I think he might have won the 1994 question. Impala SS, he says. You know, visually those cars don't do a lot for me. I was never a rail body Impala guy, but mechanically, dang. I prefer the looks of the same vintage Panthers, especially that's the aero version of the Crown Vic still. I always thought that was a really good car. And those cars have proven to be really great lasting cars. So I think that might be the 94 car that I remember.
94 for me. Can't say that's the best, best year.
Make mine the P71. It's, you know, it's not, but it's not bad. And 94 to 96, I feel like were the last really years of GM.
Now, see, you know, going history, and we're actually a few 94s indirectly through my life, because that was my dad's 94 Lexus LS400, which was a hell of a car. His 94 Viper.
Oh, that'd be a fun car. I've never driven a Viper. I'd like to, especially an early one, the no windows version.
Yeah, that's what he's got.
The closest thing I've had was I had a 93 Ford Escort, which was a good little car. LX series hatchback was the last car my grandfather bought new. But it's not really a car that I would have craved in 1994, and it's not a car that I would necessarily desire to own. It gave me really good service in college.
No, 94
and stuff. Porsches, Mercedes, anything good in that?
That would have been the tail end of the air-cooled 911s.
Those are fun. 3 Series BMW. Is there a bad year for those? Some of the late ones, I guess, got caught me.
I don't like them after the first gen. I'm not a big... No, I mean, Ferrari didn't have anything. It was just Ferrari didn't have anything new. Porsche didn't really have anything new. The Boxster didn't come out for another year or two.
A new Mustang. A Cobra.
Yeah. We're going 94, so... 93 was the end of the Fox body, so it would be the first year of the S95 Mustangs. So you would have the Cobra or the Cobra R available.
The Cobra R's are really collectible today. Somebody said they once saw a display with a 90 whatever Lightning towing a Cobra R. This was new on the on the lot back then, and it actually sold. Can you imagine how loaded you had in 1994 to pick up that Lightning hauling an R combo?
That probably would have cost you 50, 55 grand.
Yeah, there was a lot more money back then. It was the price of a nice house.
No, 94 just to me isn't a very exciting year. Disapproving Cat said skip the Mustang from 94. My mom had a 94 Mustang, and my godfather, I believe, had a 94 Mustang because he liked we talked about it a couple of episodes ago, the retro look of the 94 Mustang.
I, again, not a car that's way high up on the list, but I always appreciated those, and it's still the Pushrod 302, which your 5-liter, that means something. I know the 4.6 has aged better than it appeared like it would at the time. There's still a lot of people who have a lot of nostalgia for Windsor. And that with a 5-speed, that'd be a fun combo to drive.
Yeah, just...
A GT... but it's still more fun to drive. A Model T is slow as crap. It's still more fun to drive than...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff from the 90s. I mean, a minivan's faster than a Ferrari 308. So, I mean, you have to keep things in perspective. I mean...
Right. And style, right? Like, you drive the minivan, I don't care how fast it is or how hard it takes corners, it's still a
minivan. Yeah,
honestly, if you get four kids out of it and or you, all of your band, I mean, I guess, you know, a lot more respect for, it would be a fun one for the Roadmaster. Those were good cars.
See, that's what popped into my head, but the 95s with the LT1, guy I used to know, Dennis Brunton, he passed away a few years ago. He built kit car called the Stalker V6, used all S10 components, and man, this guy was a genius. He knew cars. You could call him up and say, hey, my Stalker's doing this, and he'd tell you exactly what to change or what to dial in for alignment and that. And he swore by the 95 Caprice wagons, Buick Roadmaster wagons, the Oldsmobile version of it, whatever, because they tow 5,000 pounds. Yeah. So 5,000 pounds and they get 25, 26 miles a gallon all day long. You can't buy a tow vehicle that gets better than that. I mean, it's actually, you know, better gas mileage than a Rivian or a Cybertruck. It's
the more powerful and efficient our engines get, the heavier our cars get. So it all evens out. Like there's never a net gain with any of this stuff. That's one of the reasons I like older platforms, is because sometimes you could retrofit them theoretically to be superior to the modern platform because you don't have to have all of the safe and emissions gear that you do with a new production vehicle.
I'm going to roll for a new year because I'm just not into 94.
All right. Well, one last thought before we leave 94, and that would be, speaking of S trucks, like I would still kind of like 4, 5, 6 S10 long box with a stick. That'd be a great little runaround. Be a lot better fuel economy than our F-250.
94, that would have been the second generation S10 though.
Yes, it would. With the 4.3, good vehicles.
Which I thought was a brilliant, brilliant move by Chevrolet when they redesigned the S10, but everything under it stayed exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Mainly due to the mini trucking crowd, because
I didn't realize that they had an influence on it.
That was one of General Motors' primary reasons for not changing anything suspension wise, is because they knew they could care. You could strip your old mini truck and move it all over to the new mini truck, or the aftermarket companies wouldn't have to develop new parts. You could just move it right over, and that would help move on. The only thing that didn't carry over was the convertible kits when that body style changed, because we went to airbags and things like that. None of the companies would touch cutting a roof off an airbag equipped truck.
I guess I don't blame them. So I've never seen a roadsterized S10. I've definitely seen Dakotas.
Well, Dakotas came factory convertible. But, you know, I had a convertible, 88 convertible Isuzu pickup, and chopping the tops off. Pickup trucks was easy to do because they're body on frame. So you didn't have to worry about, you know, you chop the top off your Escort, you park on a hill, it folds in half and the doors don't work. But when it's body on frame, you didn't have that. So everybody, you know, I would say everybody was cutting roofs off and Targa tops, and there's just a sense of relief when you take a Sawzall or a die grinder to a pickup truck. And,
you know, I don't think I've ever known any trucker person.
Well, you know,
a lot of them. Right. Well, I mean, I know a lot of them that moved into traditional hot rods in the 90s and the 2000s. Like, you can draw a direct line from guys that built really cool, they would hate the term, but, you know, traditional style rat rods later on, who had come from that mini trucking scene. And I, you know, you can see it because that body on construction comes back your time, and the size of the vehicles is similar. But so it's interesting. And of course, one of the most popular topics 20 years ago was what bodies fit on an S10 chassis, because it was like the de facto chassis swap standard.
Well, I sold my 49 Chevrolet. John Carr story. So my 49 Chevrolet one ton truck to a local guy whose full intention was to strip the body off of it and put it on an S10 platform that he had.
Because yeah, they made whole kits for some advanced design trucks. Yeah.
So there was another story I was going to go there, but I spun the wheel, and it's almost, you threw out the idea of what car would you own in 75, which is another tough year, but I actually got, what car would you own in 72?
Oh, see, that's a better year, because that's pre-5-mile-an-hour bumpers, that's pre-catalytic converters. Compression ratios had started to drop, and I think we were on the net horsepower system. But those cars were still a lot of fun to drive. Boy, there's a lot of cars in 72. I've always liked A-body Mopars, especially Valiants, and to a lesser extent, Dodge Darts, especially the hardtops. The Trans Am was a heck of a car that year. They had I forget what permutation of the 455 was current that year, maybe Super Duty, but that with a 4-speed is a great car. F-body's a little flamboyant for me now. Not a lot of Ford stuff does it for me in 72. Their engines look like they were designed by accountants, and the outsides were just getting a little baroque for me at that point. But they are supposed to be really good cars. Like, even later in the 70s, like 70s Ford passenger cars have got it going on from a quality.
Was that the year that the General Motors station wagons had the rear window that, I guess, slid into the door vertically, or, you know, rolled down into the door, and then the door would actually roll under the floor pan
for the tail? You know, I don't know, but I did bring my resources here with me. I have cars of the sensational 70s. So let me look up 72 and see if the GM wagons do that, because that doesn't sound familiar to me. But those wagons they're so big, and I've always been a smaller car guy, that I really don't know. They do have that cool, really swoopy back end on them.
disapproving cat throws out the 72 Charger, saying it's not great but sexy. If I'm correct, Tim Wellborn of the Wellborn Museum, which is a very, it's a muscle car museum, heavily biased towards Mopars in Alexander City, Alabama. Really cool place to go see. 72 Chargers is where he started from.
That's 72. The fuselage body, right? Yeah. My former coworker, Roland, one of those, and not my style, but cool, very dramatic, impressive vehicle. As you can tell from my preference for the A-body, I'm more of a folded edge kind of guy. Like, I really like mid-60s Chrysler products, and the fuselage was never my cuppa. Plus, honestly, Mopar build quality. I mean, from like 55 until, I don't know, what year is it, 2024? Like, you just couldn't get a good Mopar. Like, I drive a restored Mopar maybe, because a lot of them are better than what they were when they rolled off the factory floor, because the people put in them actually.
So it's not that much harder to make a Mopar better than what came from the factory. And who knows what's going to happen if the rumors are that, you know, the what is it, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep are going to become Chinese.
Oh, I have not heard that.
Yes, there's a rumor Stellantis may be entering bankruptcy, and I've seen a couple of stories, which I don't believe, they could be fake news at this point, but that those three brands might be being acquired by a Chinese manufacturer.
Wow.
Just pass them around. We're German one week. We're Italian one week. We're French one week. We're now we're Chinese.
Right. Well, I think you mentioned this in a previous episode, which is, what is a domestic car? Right? Is it based on content? Is it based on where the corporate headquarters is? Is it based on where lenders lived? Like,
I'm going to go, anything that doesn't have 100% excise tax could potentially be an American car, but when it has 100% excise tax. Now, for 72, I'm sorry. I got to jump Miami Vice, and I'm going to be a 365 or a Ferrari Daytona. Yeah.
In 72?
72, Ferrari Daytona. Carrera RS, maybe. I'm gonna be European all over in 72.
Was the 2002 out in 72, or did that come later in the decade?
I think the 2002 was out, but I don't think the fuel injected version was.
Okay. And how about the Datsun 510, which is like the poor man's 2002. Those were both right in my wheelhouse.
Was that 72? I thought that was probably 74. I could be wrong. I mean, I've got a computer in front of me. I'd look it up, but I'm trying to do this from memory.
Right.
I think the 510 was about 74, and I think the 210 might have been out. But,
or how about the Z car? Was there a Z car in 72, or is that too early?
No, the 240Z came out in 70 or 71.
Here or over there, or both?
Let me think back. I know we had a 72 because a gentleman that used to work for my father had a 70, and 72 might be first U.S. year, because he dated a Playboy centerfold from 72 and had a 72 240Z.
Wow. Was she into him for the Z?
I don't think he cared.
Well, I mean, just, you know, if you want to replicate the kind of success, it helps to know, it's like, is it the cologne? Is it my taste in automobiles? Is it this turtleneck I've been wearing on every date? I don't know.
Since we throw in John's stories all the time, I had broken up with my fake redhead girlfriend when I was in about 2010. And I was in an event at Barber's, and everybody's warning me, no redheads. And I bumped into somebody driving the museum's Lotus 6 on some exhibition stuff, who turned out to be a Playboy playmate who was redheaded. And then we went out later in my Caterham 7. But just one night, you know, had drinks and that. But so I think it's the car.
It's the car.
Sure, it sure as hell wasn't me. So 240Z introduced in America in 1970, according to Disapproving Cat. See, it's nice to have these guys that can, like, I'm gonna assume, internet without flapping arms around over here.
Right. Yes. People who can look gracefully at the internet like we can't when we're live streaming.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, this the Z car, even though I've never driven, has always held a soft spot to me, because I saw one in a junkyard when I was in high school, and the body was entirely gone, but the chassis was there and the engine was there, and it had the cool like cast aluminum cam cover that said, I don't know, Datsun on it or something. Dang, that's cool. And then later on, I realized that like so many of the dimensional aspects of those cars was related to the Ford Falcon. Like they used the same bolt pattern and things. And so when I had my Falcons, I really strongly considered using a Z car instead of the Ford 6 and just dressing it with a Ford air and seeing how realized it wasn't a Ford OHC engine.
Again, if I'm, it's either 231 or 431 that I drive on this time. Now I'm north of Huntsville, Alabama. I think around Hazel Green, Alabama, just before Tennessee, there's a off the side of the road, big metal or big steel building. I call them Morton buildings, which is a Midwest term, but all fenced in. And there's probably 15 rusting away 240, 260, 280 Z cars around that building. And so I'm assuming it's a Z aficionado's property and would love to see what's inside the building.
Right. Because if he's got the fleet of parts cars outside, like what are they maintaining inside?
Exactly. It's never been open as I've driven by, but I spun the wheel again and 1943 popped up. And I'm probably going to go with a Willie's Jeep.
Yeah, not a lot of options there. You got your Willie's Jeep. You got your Dodge weapons carrier. You got Studebaker and GMC and Chevrolet 2.5-ton trucks and a whole bunch of mothballed 1942 cars. Yeah, what was Cadillac? Right. The Cadillac, the Stuart M5 had twin Cadillac V8s in it. The M18 Hellcat tank destroyer had a Buick Dynaflow.
Well, would we still have had Volkswagens and Mercedes being built or Daimlers being built?
The Wehrmacht used Beetles. And the Kubelwagen used a lot of Beetle-derived components in it. And the Kubelwagen inspired the later VW thing, so kind of like came a full circle again. And I will argue, and people don't always like it like this argument, but that the Kubelwagen was an influence on the U.S. developing the Jeep, because fairly early in the war, they were still thinking World War One style, where motorcycles and sidecars. And then the British captured some Kubelwagens in France and in North Africa, and sent them over here for study. And all this light car thing has got some merit. So they had Bantam and those folks put together their prototypes and went that direction. The Japanese had a really similar car too. And I forget what it's called, but it looks like an American Bantam, but it's four-wheel drive. And you didn't see them in the Pacific because there were no reasons to have them really there, but they used them a fair amount in Manchuria, China. The same way used our Jeeps, except they were only a two-seater and it was like, you know, harder to mount a machine gun on one and such. But they were interesting vehicles. So it was like sort of a thing that everybody had the same idea at the same time. Probably not too many game shows giving away new cars in 19. Wouldn't that have been nice? I'll take a Ford Super Deluxe, just one of the mothballed 42s. And I want the junk dealer sticker that entitles me to extra fuel rations.
So 43 is kind of I say a bust year, but for very obvious reasons. And for those that don't know, those that are actually listening and trying to learn, obviously it was 42 was the last year we did automobile production in the U.S. because of the entry into World War One in late 41. And
World War II.
Yeah, excuse me, World War II. And there basically the automotive industry came to a halt in order to support the war effort.
Yeah, the 42 model year is really interesting. First of all, a lot of people don't realize it happened at all. They think 41 was the last year because Pearl Harbor happened in 41. But as we all know, the new model year cars come out in the fall. So 42 production actually started in August. And even when Pearl Harbor had curtailed car production, they had been slowly taking strategic materials out of car production even before the war started. For example, 1941 Buicks have aluminum pistons. In 1942, they have cast iron pistons because aluminum was a strategic material. And then they curtailed new car sales before they curtailed production, and they stockpiled a bunch of the 92 production and doled it out during the war. Like say you were a country doctor and your Model A finally gave up the ghost catastrophically, you could potentially qualify for a new car from that pool because you had an urgent critical. Same deal, like they produced some Harleys during the war, 43, 44, 45 model years, but they were all for police production. And of course, you know, a lot of military bikes still in those years. But if you ever see a big twin, especially a flathead like a UL. Those are often police bikes from those years.
So I've spun the wheel again, and we are looking at 1968.
Ah, boy, a tumultuous year. You should go first. I've been kind of hogging this.
Immediately, of course, I jump foreign again, and that was the year the Ferrari Daytona was introduced. But I would have to say if I in 68, I would probably have to hope for, we forgot the Pantera in 70. No, that was 73. No. Lamborghini Mira. That would probably be one of my choices, introduced in 66, ran through 72 or 73 itself. But I think Lamborghini Mira, what year? We're 68, right? Mm-hmm. So would an Aston Martin DB5 still be in production? I think they still made it to 68.
Were they around that late?
I know they made it to 66. Maybe it would be a DB6.
Which is a pretty similar looking car, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're difficult to tell apart except for the ejection seats.
I think that was an aftermarket option. So,
68 Cadillac Fleetwood from the disapproving cat.
This is one of the model years I actually have experience owning, and I would trust a Jeep from 60 because I had a 68 Camaro, a great car.
You see, I've never been into the Camaro. 67, 68, 69. But
I would not have selected it for myself because, again, it's not my style per se, but it was a great car, objectively speaking. It drove real nice. It was fun and easy to work on. It was good looking, you know? I have no complaints. I just always wanted something that was a little.
Now, I mean, you've got a lot of good stuff in 68. I mean, you've got the Chevelles, you've got the Mustangs, like. Was Mach 1, was that the first year for the Mach 1?
I think 69 was.
Okay.
68 Shelbys were still the big deal.
That was the introduction of the 68, 69, 70 Charger, the boxy kind of one from Dukes of Hazzard.
Used up about 3/4 of the 69 Chargers in the country, folding them in half on jumps.
That's a wise tale. They did ruin a lot, but I think it was the actual number of casualties is around 300 or 400. Can't think. The pickup trucks were kind of boring. There was no big changes or anything, if I remember correctly.
But a four bump side is a good pickup truck. I mean, I would draw one of those. Absolutely. My dad had dent sides, and those were great.
Do we have the Econoline Ford van and the Dodge A100 with their flat nose, or were those done in 67? You know, the bumper got to the accident, then your feet, then the rest of the car.
We had the Hemmings shop truck is an A of that style. It's an early one, a 6 or 5. I'm honestly not sure. I mean, they still made a Chevy van in that vein. It was no longer a Corvair at that point. It's the regular water cooled drivetrain. But I'm gonna assume that there was some kind of forward control Dodge van in 68 still.
Yeah, we would have still. I'm still going. We had the you had the GTO. You probably I'd have to go back and really look. The Maserati Merrick.
I'd like to drive a Firebird from that era. That was the car I always kind of wished my Camaro was because I just thought the Firebirds had a little more panache styling wise, and the Pontiac V8's always fascinating. I'm not huge fan of the A bodies, the GM A bodies from the 68 redesign. They're not bad looking. They don't speak to me the 64 to 67 does.
So did we establish what your 68 game show winning car should be?
Like definitively? Yeah. I mean, it would be hard to go wrong with the Fleetwood. Although honestly, in 68, the flashy whiz-bang car to win would be a Toronado or an Eldorado because they were then Toronado was in its second year on that front wheel drive platform and Eldorado was in its first.
You said that and it reminded me back my early 20s. Friends with a couple of guys and their dad was huge into the 68 Eldorados, 500 cubic inch transversely mounted V8 or whatever, front wheel drive. Had a couple of them in his barn that he was always restoring.
They used the latest final version of that engine family in the earliest versions of our Cadillac. So theoretically, if I could find a 77 to 81 Cadillac with the 425 or the 368, I could pull all of that out of there, find a 500 and install a 500. I've thought about it. A 500 is 8.2 cubic inches. So if I could find a dual quad mount, I'd use two 4.1 liter throttle bodies like the one that's already on 500. I'd probably get a whopping like 10 miles per gallon.
Let's say you could probably put a toggle switch on the dashboard and then you could have had a really early version of the 4.8 Cadillac.
You know, it's funny when people see my car, the first thing they always ask is, oh, is this the 864? And like, no, that was 81 only. Thank goodness. And I think that with a modern computer brain, you could probably make that system work just fine.
Well, they do. I mean, a lot of cars have cylinder deactivation now.
Right. It's just the processor speeds just weren't E1. But again, I mean, if you could mega squirt a car, you could work the cylinder deactivation the same way.
That's what I've always said, and Derek and I have talked about on earlier episodes, is that there are no new ideas in the car world. We just now have the technology to make the old ideas work better.
One of my favorite pictures is there is a photo from the 30s of a GM test engine, and they're calling it cold carburation because, you know, carburetors have to have heat on them so that the fuel stays atomized in the intake manifold. Well, instead, they had separated the jets from the throttle body, so the throttle body only controlled the air, and then they had run the jets way down in the bottom of the intake manifold. So it wasn't true port fuel injection, but it was port carburation. It was brilliant. And it was like, it's just a step away from what we're doing today. Well, direct injection's a step. There's no new ideas. There's just the miniaturization of technology that allows them to.
Let's see what the roll of the dice pops up here now. Ooh, 1986.
Oh, that's the year my brother was born. And we had an 86. We had our 1986 GMC Safari van, which was my parents looked at Chrysler minivans. They looked at Ford minivans, and they looked at GM minivans, and they decided they wanted an Astro van. And by the time they added in all the accessories they wanted on the Astro van, they decided it was a better deal just to go buy the GMC. And boy, they got their money's worth. I never liked it. I don't like the forward driving position of vans. I don't like the thing blew around like a sail. But
we touched on that at the beginning of the show. Now, those Astros and Safaris were great because we talked mini trucks a little bit. Those were great to lower and put your big booming systems in. But I had a friend that had their family had the Astro conversion van. Maybe it was a Safari conversion van. I'm pretty sure my family or the business at least had an 86 Caravan, because I know we had an 84, 85, 86, 87. We had pretty much every model year of those in the early runs of the Caravan Voyager families. Disapproving Cat throws in the IROC Z.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. I like those. I don't think I was the one I would choose, but I like them better than the Firebird. Third gen's the only era in which I prefer the Camaro, generally speaking. But that was an iconic car of the era. Actually, the Mustang's not bad in 86. It's not as good as it would get in 87, but it's getting there. But the car from the Pontiac Parisienne Safari, that's the car my parents should have.
Is that the wagon?
That's the full-size B-body one. The Olds 307 and the 700 R4 and, I'm sorry, 204 R. Yeah, it was just, I drove an 89 Caprice around a little. I loved it. So I like the styling of the Parisienne. That's where it would be.
I think my grandfather had the Pontiac Parisienne. Yeah, I'm going to say, yes, he did. He had the Pontiac Parisienne wagon, a white with wood grain. And then he followed it up with whatever followed it, or it was another Parisienne, because he liked it because the window would roll down into the door and then he could load lumber and, you know, drive around with the window down so all the exhaust gases come in, which is why most of those windows don't roll down anymore. 86, the one that sticks out in my mind big time is the Chrysler Laser XT. The ad was always a red Chrysler Laser. With black trim and black T-tops. That you know, was basically the Dodge Daytona, but the Laser XT was the big ad for me there. That might be the first, that is the first year of the Chrysler Conquest TSI, the wide-body Conquest Mitsubishi Starion, I believe it was, because you had the narrow body in 84 and 85, and then 86, that one came and ran 86, 87, 88. See, I'm trying to think what the 86 Trans Am looked like. It's, you know, that's
2.8 in the nose, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wasn't too big, you know, I wasn't big onto the GM stuff, the Mustang stuff in 86. I had a friend with the 86 Mustang GT, but many years after 86.
If I want a game park, that's another one. That's a good, I have heard I think, the 302s from those years are not as great as the 307s, but
I think that was the first year the Ferrari Testarossa lost its high mounted rear view mirrors on the exterior and they fell down to the traditional place.
Is that good or bad?
Collectability, I'd rather have an 84, 85 with the high mirror. I kind of always liked it, but it looks stupid. But keep in mind then in 88 with my convertible Isuzu, I mounted my mirrors way up high on the door frames too. Lamborghini Countach wasn't bad that year. 80 was the last year, the Yapla. The 911 was just a 911. Nothing big and special there. Or was that the first year that you, yeah, I'm asking you, was that the first year of the factory slant nose of the Porsche 911?
Actually, you fit the 180s fact. No, I'm sorry.
The 180s foreign car fact. Saab was still doing traditional Saab funky stuff.
Doing that VW Porsche, was it the 914, the mid-engine car? I always thought those were not cool.
No, that was 72, 74.
Okay, so a decade earlier.
Yeah. And by the way, those were not Porsches anywhere but the United States. They were Volkswagens everywhere else.
Well, that's the only place I've lived, so that's what counts.
Yes.
I thought the four cylinders were Porsches in Europe and the V6s were. I'm sorry, I thought the four cylinders were Volkswagens in Europe and the V6s were Porsches.
It was the first year of the Ferrari 328 because 85 was the last year of the 308. So the 86 was the first year of the Ferrari 328. I just keep forgetting about jumping over to the land of the rising sun.
And you even hit a British car.
Say, oh, if Derek was here, he could really help us out. XJS came out in, was it? I guess that was 83, 84. Is that the first year they did the convertible, though, the XJS?
Is that the two-seat Roadster V12 car, the XJS? Yeah. I don't know. I'm proud that I remembered the car. Sort of the E-type successor, but a much more grand tourer than sports car.
Yeah, there's never, in my opinion, Jaguar's never done a good E-type successor. It's hard coming.
It'll be electric.
It's hard. I don't even know if Jaguar makes cars anymore.
Aren't they on some kind of hiatus or something? Like there's something going on.
Well, Jaguar's owned by a Chinese company now. It's owned by the same. I believe they're owned by the same company Lotus and Volvo are.
Dodge.
Or is it? Or is Jaguar?
Tata. Dubai? Oh, that's Indian.
Yeah, can't remember. Because I think Jaguar Land Rover, I think those are Indian now.
Right. I get the impression that Indian companies enjoy buying British heritage brands. It's sort of turnabout for the Raj or just they hold an important place in Indian culture just as much as they do British culture.
A disapproving cat says Tata Motors. So that would be correct. Make the cheapest car on the planet and then make cars that they charge way too much for.
Well, Ford made both the Model T and the GT40.
That was, man, all of a sudden I was thinking McCour XR4 Ti. I think that was 86 also. And Dave's going, what the hell are you talking about? Can you speak English?
I'm okay. No, that's cool. Very good, John. I like, yes. 4-year-old me did not know what these cars were. 42-year-old me does not know what these cars are, but it's okay.
Yep.
Some of them, like I recognize some of the Chrysler models you met and had I know what a Dodge Challenger is, so I could kind of visualize that. They were done with all the Shelby versions by 86.
Oh, no, they had the Dodge Daytona Turbo Z Shelby Edition. They had the Dodge Lancer Shelby was 88. The Dodge Shadow CSX, which was, we forgot, because that's too early too. Damn it. They still made them. It's the GL, the Dodge Omni GL HS. The Omni goes like hell some more.
Is that what the S stands for?
Yep. GLH is goes like hell and some more is because it was a little bit stepped up. I think 88 88 we got the Dodge Acclaim RT, which was a Shelbyized. Let me spin the wheel here again.
We've exhausted 1986.
I've exhausted the 80s. Oh, shit. Sorry.
We got another 80s year.
88. We're going to skip that one. So, since I covered 88 when we did 86.
Right. We need a 50s roll now.
57.
Oh, okay. This is a good year. The peak of the first horsepower rate.
Porsche 356.
Were they making the Carrera version by then, or would you have to, would Super be the
I think this, it might be, the Carrera might have been 59 or 60.
I'm a sucker for an inverted bathtub, so I like 356.
57, I think I could do the pontoon fendered Ferrari 250 Testarossa. That's one of my favorite cars of all time. To look at, not to drive.
Maserati, because it's not fun to drive, or because you haven't driven.
Because they're one of those things. I use it quite a lot. It's the Billy Crystal. I'd rather look good than feel good, because I've learned race cars are not fun cars to drive.
They're designed for one thing, and that's not comfortable.
Yes, they're not pleasant to go grand touring. I'm a GT car more kind of person than that, but. I mean, they look so damn good, but I would really, really hate to drive one in original configuration. Now, if I had $28, $30 million for one of them, maybe I would go ahead and say, F it, and put a leather interior in it, put some sound deadening on it so that I could use it, and to heck with the Ferrari aficionados, but then they would never let me buy another Ferrari. No Ferrari F80 for me, because he put the Ricardos in his 57 Ferrari.
If you've got the 57, in my opinion, you've got the Ferrari.
57 for me, and you know, you've always got the T-Birds, you've got the Chevy. I want to say Cadillac Eldorado, but the 58's the one to own, not the 57.
No, the 57's a great car, but it's not the BR. It's if that's what floats your boat. We got to have the brushed stainless top in there. It's 58 was crazy.
Yeah, I learned the other day, one of the local shops around here, they're restoring 258s right now. And then I know one gentleman in town owns a 58, has had it at Pebble and stuff before. And those are just such gorgeous cars, you know. And of course, you know, they've got the women's accessories in the back seat and the bar in the front seat and things that we should have in our cars today.
Probably would be better to put the bar in the back seat. Don't
How can I reach it from driver's seat?
Well, you're not supposed to. Just look at your pet, your compact, and powder your nose, because we have the ladies stuff. Yeah,
those cars have do those have a humidor in them?
I don't think they did. I don't think I've heard of them. I know the 58s Cadillacs had the magnetic tumblers. That's when people ask me where the cup holders are. My car was like to pop the glove box up. You see those two circular depressions? Yeah. That's the cup holders.
No, I'm not big. I'm not a big 50s guy. Chrysler 300C. Is that 50? That was 57, was it not?
No, the C is 55. So
no, that's the A. The 300 came out in 55.
Yeah, but they called it the C300.
No, you had the 55 300. You had the 56 300B. You had the 57 and 58 Chrysler 300C, and the 57 Chrysler 300C was the first car sold with quad headlamps, because they actually had a version with dual headlamps, but they got the DOT waiver in 57 for it. Yeah, so I'll jump into an American one. I would take a 57 Chrysler 300C.
Yeah, the dual quad headlamp thing is interesting, because like a lot of states didn't approve them. So you had like double versions and even some retrofit kits intended for the 58 cars. 57 is a weird year for me, because I really like the engines, but I feel like the styling had moved on from what I'm into then. So like I like the 57 Chevy, but I don't think the 57 Ford is nearly as nice looking as the 55 and 56. Same deal with Plymouth. Plymouth is probably the best looking of the bunch. Christine or 57?
58, I think.
Was she a 50?
I think she was a
58. Yeah, she's got quads, so she's a 58. Okay. But anyway, 57 is a good Plymouth. Miss Tulsa was 57, the one that they buried in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and dug up in 2007 at their chamber, which was kind of a sad fate. What was a brand new 57 Plymouth at the time. And those cars all ended up really rust prone Mopars.
It's still a brand new 57 Plymouth, just a little bit of rust. It's like the story that's all over the Viper pages the last week or so, where the dealership, and I can't remember where it is, might be Texas, then 93 or 94, they put a Viper, just lifted it up and put it on their sign, brand new Viper. And then they had, I think they had an aftermarket hardtop on it, but still had the plastic windows and stuff in it. And they pulled this thing down and they've cleaned it up. But I mean, all the clear coat had flaked off this thing, and it was filled with birds' nests. And you
know, it's like all those, yeah, it's all got those cars out of that Chevy dealership in the Midwest.
It's got 26 miles on it, but there's some 50,000 mile Vipers that are in better shape than this one. So actually, that car out of Tulsa is probably in very similar shape, just a little bit more rust.
Yeah, it was pretty well dissolved up to about the belt line, as my recollection. It looked like it had been on the Titanic. You know, it's a really underrated car style-wise from these is the 57. I think that's a, and that is, again, I guess 58 the next year, which look very similar except for the quad headlamps. Got the first 400 horsepower engine in America, Mel Series 3.
Not very. I'm not. See, I can sit here with that odd look. I'm not sure what a 58 Mercury looks like. 57 Mercury looks like.
Kind of squared off, similar bulging headlamps to the Ford, but they're in a chrome bezel instead of just, you know, larger and more ostentatious. But I think where's that styling?
Well, I did one last spin because we're approaching the end of tonight's episode. And I mean, I think we've done a good job, maybe not of the, what car would we necessarily want to win on a game show, but recapping various years of automobiles throughout time, bringing out some stuff that we forgot and things. But and the criteria I put in, which I really shouldn't have, I did 1940 to 2004, so we're at least 20 years old, so a few states will allow you to make that a historic automobile. Etsy will let you sell it as an antique because you can sell antiques on Etsy at 20 years. But so I should have started at like 45, but that's a whole nother one. 2002 is our final year. Are you even familiar with cars that new?
a little bit. Our truck is from 2003. The 2002 truck's got to be pretty similar to that. My mother-in-law had a 2002 Blazer that was almost identical to our 96 Blazer. So seems like a decent, if sort of 1994-ish era American automobiles. I kind of remember GM quality having fallen off, by at least in the older vehicles, because they were older platforms, because it seemed like to push people more newly developed stuff. Still had the Ford Panther there. Not as nice looking. At that point, I'd just as soon have the Grand Mark as the Crown Vic, because they've got the same roof line, and I think the grill is a little.
I always thought the Grand Marquis looked better. My grandmother, her last car was a 2005 Grand Marquis. I really, really wanted to buy it, but it got sold out from under me.
2002, the year after I graduated high school. And, you know, 2002 was the year was my second year on the ham message board, and I was fully invested in trying to get some kind of 50s or Earth car. no new cars on my radar at all. The time I was into like 52 Fords.
Trying to remember. That's 02. So the Chrysler Crossfire would be current. I don't know what year it was introduced. Mercedes SLK, Chevrolet Avalanche.
We had an 03 Yukon XL, and that was a decent truck. 8 front tires. Like, you know, other than that, it was nice driving vehicle, very powerful, had that 5LS series engine in it.
Thinking that C5 Corvette. So.
Yes. Which are kind of bland, inoffensive, likely to be retired country club cars at this point. I don't know. Could be fun to go drive in anger at the track, but not really a thing you lay awake at night thinking of.
That was the very beginning of the Chris Bangle BMW era, if I remember correctly.
A disapproving cat says the Chrysler Crossfire came out in 2004, so that's a non-con for us in 2002. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how those years start to blur together if you aren't keeping on top of that stuff.
Well, I'm trying to think, because I bought my 03 S10, and there was a Chrysler Crossfire on the lot. He might be right, because I think I bought my 03 S10 in
the end of the year.
Towards the end of the year, it would have been October of 03. Yeah, October of 03 when I bought it. because I bought my
gear. Right, as the full force were coming up. Yeah. So you saw one of the earliest Crossfires on the lot.
No. I bought it in February of 04, because I bought my Acura CL in November of 03, and I got rid of it in February or March of 04 for the S10. Now C5s are getting eaten up as cheap track cars. But that I'm going to say C5s, then that must mean C5s are pretty good cars. I mean, unless they're getting eaten up for Lemons Racing,
I saw Supercharged Bonneville. That's a good choice to disapprove.
Those cars have been around forever because I had a friend in high school. So about 90, it was after high school, had like a 94, 95 Bonneville SSC.
Right. Well, that's, that's this era, is that mid 90s to early 2000s, kind of the last, I don't know, a much better era in retrospect than we get credit for, but comparison with what's coming since, is much better.
What it had the Lexus SC400, I believe.
A supercharged Park Avenue sleeper. That would be fun. Who would not be expected? And honestly, the Buick's a little better looking in those years, not always, but just.
We're 02 still. Well, that'd be the Ferrari 550, 575 era. So big, nice front engine V12, if I remember correctly.
That sounds appealing.
That's the way a Ferrari should be. I really don't like the new stuff. That's another rough year. Not a lot that sticks out of my mind. Yeah, what a...
All right. Well, so next week we set the random number generator to... what, 1919 to 1940?
Well, we might do that a little bit later on when we get Derek on an episode. I think next week is our, I don't have my calendar in front of me. Give me a second to pull up my calendar. I think next week's our Christmas episode.
Oh, good. I've been working on my list.
My iPad won't wake up, so let me try this on my iPhone. Yes, next week will be our Christmas wish lists. If you do have that put together, Dave, email me your list so I can start getting it populated to the website for links links to all of our fabulous gift suggestions. And matter of fact, anybody out there listening, go ahead and email us at nodrivinggloves@gmail.com. And we'll, if you've got some suggestions or ideas that things you would want for Christmas, or you think ideas you have for Christmas for car people. But that doesn't necessarily mean they have to be car things. I mean, car people drink beer, car people cook, car people smoke cigars, car people, hey, we're car people. We're all walks of life. If you think of something interesting, let us know.
Now I want to cook out and have a cigar.
I had a cigar. Actually, I had two cigars earlier. Maybe I shouldn't say that anymore because it's open enrollment. And I don't smoke during open enrollment.
I didn't hear anything. He did not inhale.
So, you don't inhale cigars.
No.
I just had a big conversation.
Just puff out to get the room out.
To be technical and to get into cigar trivia, inhaling cigars is almost the absolute worst thing you can do. Cigars are perfectly safe until you inhale. But when you inhale, the chemical composition of the cigar smoke and the chemical composition of the fluids in your lungs, one's an acid, one's a base, and it begins to crystallize immediately, which is even worse than smoking cigarettes. You just have to be careful. So those that sit there and like to inhale their cigars, it's a really, really, really bad idea. And the NASM report and monograph number 9 do not apply to you. Those are the FDA-sponsored reports that say cigar smoking is healthy. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here.
Keep your motors running, guys. Don't forget to like and subscribe and share us with your...
Yes, and we should be back to a regular production schedule for a few weeks. I don't think we're taking Christmas off, but we'll talk about that. And... well, we'll see where we go. Derek should be back next week. He's back from Japan, but then he had a museum event he had to host this evening. So we'll be back. Maybe we'll catch up a little bit with Derek as we do our Christmas list next week. Or maybe we'll just see. With that, it's time to get off your ass, burn some gas, because John and Dave are out.